I'm Ed Adams, and this is the Weekly Genealogy Toolkit, the podcast that helps the new genealogist get the most out of their research time and avoid the most common pitfalls. When I went on my first physical genealogy road trip, I fell in love with old, dusty tomes found in the back rooms of courthouses. These gigantic books, with substantial bindings that look like they belong more in a Lord of the Rings movie than in the records office. I had no idea how to find anything in them at first, but I really enjoyed turning page after fragile page, uncovering fascinating stories. I think my all-time favorite physical record name is the Talbot County, Georgia Pistol Toters Registry. I just thought that toting was such a funny verb to use for firearms, but aside from being fun to poke around in, they really did kind of throw me for a loop. I didn't make any discoveries that first visit because I just didn't really know what I was looking at or how to use them. And I was way too self-conscious to go ask any of the clerks in the courthouse because I thought they would just see me as a nuisance. Thank goodness. Everything that we use online is indexed, though, and searchable through various forms, right? I mean, we don't really have to know how to use those records collections because I just type in Adams in the search box, and if there's any Adamses in the record, they'll be served up to me on a silver platter. If only this were true. Yes, there are tons of searchable records online. We call them indexed. Either a person or a piece of software has combed over all of the records in those record collections and extracted the most pertinent information to be able to be searched digitally. It makes finding things in sources like the census very simple, which again is what makes online genealogy so popular. But what would you say if I told you that indexed records are only the tip of the iceberg of what you can find online? There is a whole world waiting for you, beyond the search forms and deep in the recesses of the online genealogy websites. There are sources called non-indexed collections. By non-indexed, it just means that no one and no software has gone through and extracted any of the information from the images that are available. So they are truly just that, images. When I looked at my first non-indexed record online, again, I wasn't really sure what I was looking at. I had only ever worked with indexed records, and I wasn't even aware that there were records that had complete image scans, but that had not been indexed. So I opened this record that was just hundreds of pages of images in an archaic handwriting, and I shrugged and figured, well, this is useless. And I moved on. Please, don't do this. These records are not useless. That's why they were scanned and put online. But let's pause for a second. Where do you even find non-indexed records? Well, first and foremost, in the card catalog. Remember last episode? If you went and dug around in the catalog after listening to last week's episode, you probably came across a non-indexed record or two. On Ancestry, if you're in the card catalog and find a record collection that looks interesting to you and you click on it, but no search form comes up, that's a non-indexed record. So I used the example of Ukrainian records last week. Let's stick with that for now. If I went into the card catalog looking for good sources for an ancestor in Ukraine, I'd probably just search Ukraine in the title or keyword field, and I'd get a lot of good things to look at. One of the things that interested me when I first did this for myself was the record collection titled Western Ukraine, Catholic Church Book Duplicates, 1600 to 1937. It was interesting to me because my family in Ukraine is from the west of the country, and because that date range was really enticing. I might find lots of information in there. So I clicked on the record collection, and all that came up was a short blurb describing the records inside. Baptisms through 1900, marriages and deaths for Catholics living in eastern Galicia, a province of the Austrian Empire now located in western Ukraine. Great, this is sounding really good, but how do I search? There's no search fields. Just off to the right is a block titled, Browse This Collection. That's your indication that this is a non-indexed record. So it's time to roll up your sleeves and put on your glasses. We're going hunting. In the Browse block, it offers a drop-down for religion. This is a record for Catholic church books in western Ukraine, so Greek Catholic is the only choice. Now you have to select which parish you want to browse within. Maybe we'll look at identifying parishes within Western Ukraine some other time, but for now, let's just say I already know that my ancestor was born in Novostrelitska, so I select that parish and it shows me a series of links. One of those links is for births from 1894 to 1901. That's great because according to immigration records I've already found, my ancestor was born in 1894 or perhaps 1895. So I click on that link and find a title page for that portion of the collection, and great. It's in a combination of Latin, Polish, and Ukrainian. Don't be discouraged. I'll do an episode in the future on how to do research in languages you don't understand, but for now let's say I can read everything. It looks like a chronological list of children born in the parish, starting in January 1894. This is where things get challenging. For this record, there is no image index that you can go to in order to find what page your ancestor might be on, so armed with the name of my ancestor and the rough birth years, you start combing through, looking at the child's first name for each record. I don't need to bother myself for now with any record except for ones for Stepan. Or, since this record has first names recorded in Latin, I'm looking for Stephanus. Once I find a Stephanus, which is a reasonably popular name, I just dart my eyes over to the right real quick and check on the parent's surname. I'm looking for Krupka, so when I see a Stephanus Zarecki, I just keep looking. I get lucky, though, and I find him on the second page. Stephanus, born on 5 August 1894, son of Mikhail and Justina Krupka. There you have it. Now I know Stepan's exact birth date, his parents' names, and if you keep looking through the records, you'll learn even more. If you never looked into indexed records, you would go the rest of your life never knowing the parents of Stepan. You would assume that this is one of those unbreakable brick walls and move on. But now you've got his parents' names, and actually further down the column, you'll find his maternal grandparents' names as well. Actually, records like this particular one are short enough that it's often worth it to browse through several years of the collection, and you're likely to find the brothers and sisters of Stepan. This record has likely not been indexed because it's in a few different languages, and it's a fairly complex record with a lot of information crammed in a not very neat way into a very small area. It may simply be that there's just not enough of Ancestry's customers demanding this kind of record, and so they haven't leveraged their resources against indexing records like this. Let's look at another example, a little closer to home for those of us in the United States. Let's also switch websites from Ancestry.com to FamilySearch, because I do love a good free resource. Many of my family lines work their way back to either side of the backcountry portions of the Savannah River. It almost became kind of a meme for me when I was initially working out some of those earlier lines that, regardless of where all my family had been over the centuries, they all end up in about 4 counties in South Carolina and Georgia, right along the river. One of those families of interest for me is the Browns of Hart County, Georgia. Hopping over to FamilySearch, taking a cue from last episode, I go to the catalog and just search for records of Hart County. I find 57 listings, although several of them are duplicates. Many of them are unfortunately not available for online viewing. Some of them are available as microfilm at the Family History Library in Salt Lake City, others available as books at the same or at other libraries. As an aside, I'd recommend searching for those books on WorldCat because you never know when one of your local libraries might have a copy of a book that you'd really like to see. And although I'm sure Salt Lake City is beautiful, I'd prefer to just go a few miles down the road if a book is all I'm after. Some records are available online, but only from a FamilySearch center or FamilySearch affiliate, usually co-located with a Latter-day Saint church or libraries. But some of the records are available online from the comfort of your own home as browsable records. These are records that you cannot search, and you'll have to use them very similarly to how you'd use the original record. For example, I found the headright and loose lottery plats for Hart County, A through Z, 1772 to 1909. Despite that date range, it's a fairly short record collection, and while there's not anything interesting for my family, there's some great information there for someone if they're willing to just take some time and look. One that really jumped out to me was under the maps category of records. I'm a sucker for maps and always have been. I've probably spent a few thousand hours of my life just looking at maps, and I don't consider that to be wasted time. So when I saw that there was an 1889 map of the county and that it was available to view online, I clicked on it as quickly as I could. The map was the first in a series of maps funded by Congress that ultimately grew into the United States Geological Survey. This map has, of course, the general map features you'd expect, such as political boundaries, major hydrology, some roads and town locations, but it also has a nice description of the county's history and characteristics such as predominant crops and natural resources. But the reason that you look at this map longer than, say, 5 minutes, is because it also features the locations of the residences of many of the leading men and women of the county. So after quickly cross-referencing the 1880 census to confirm what part of Hart County my Browns lived in, I looked at that section of the map, and it's as if FamilySearch uploaded this record just for me. I can see the entire extended family plotted out on the map. I can see who stayed close to mom and pop, who was adventurous and moved several miles away. I can see their neighbors and look at the roads to get a sense of their likely routes for coming and going to various economic centers. The great thing about this particular record is that this map was recommissioned several times, so you can cross-reference it over time to see who inherited various family properties, and in my case, you can sort of watch the kids move away for greener pastures. This one source really started to flesh out the world that my family lived in, and I would never have found it if all I was searching for was indexed records. Just like when you visit a physical repository and you see a stack of loose papers in a corner, you'll never know what's in those papers if you don't at least look at them. The same goes for unindexed records online. You just have to click on them and start looking through them to see what sort of information is in it. How is the information structured, and is there any internal organizational scheme? Many of these records will be indexed, just not digitally. They'll have several pages up front, with alphabetized listings by surname, with page references that make using the record almost as easy as a digitally indexed record, while others won't have any apparent organizational scheme whatsoever. Any record collection titled Loose Papers is always an adventure. So when you start poking around the catalog and start to see these record collections that you can't search, have some curiosity and just open them up and have a look. Worst case scenario is you spend some time learning about the location that you have some interest in. And you never know when that one unindexed record will knock down that brick wall that's been frustrating you so much. I'm excited for you. If you've never looked into unindexed records, you're about to have an entire world of research opportunities open up for you. You may have thought that you'd found everything there is to find for some of your lines, but you've only seen the tip of the iceberg. So get out there and start investigating. If you find something, I'd love to hear about it. Feel free to reach out to me on Twitter at @TheWGTPod. If these tips are really helping, please go leave a review. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time. Next week, we're going to start looking at what names can tell you. In genealogy, we spend so much time just looking at names on old records, but have you ever thought that there might be a clue in someone's name? I hope you have a great week, and I'll see you then.